Welcome to the Hyperemesis Files podcast with me, your presenter, Charlotte Howden. I'm an HG campaigner and the co-producer and presenter of the world's first documentary about hyperemesis. Sick, the battle against HG is coming to a video on demand service soon. But until then, the Hyperemesis Files will act as a voice for all women who are currently suffering with or who have survived hyperemesis gravidarum. Welcome to the third episode of the Hyperemesis Files, and my guest today is a woman called Jo. She is from Kent in the UK and she has two children and has had hyperemesis with both of those pregnancies. So welcome to you, Jo.
Hi, welcome. Thank you for having me.
Not at all. Thank you for being on the show. So Jo, you reached out to me with your interest in being on the podcast, and when I read your story, one of the things that really jumped out at me is the fact that for both of your pregnancies, you weren't actually sick that many times. I think it was, you know, about 10 times. So that's what we're going to talk about today, and I think it's really important. So let's start with your first pregnancy. And can you tell me a bit about what you did experience and the symptoms that you did have?
Yeah, absolutely. So my first pregnancy, I'd never heard of hyperemesis, and I was really excited to be pregnant and thought this was going to be great. And then it hit about 5 weeks and I did throw up, but it seemed more than that. And it was really a very heavy feeling of nausea. And this went on and on and on until I got to 12 weeks and it was my scan day and I couldn't get out of bed. And if I'm completely honest, I didn't even want to. It wasn't exciting. I just didn't want to go.
Yeah.
Which is obviously strange. Anyway, dragged myself out of bed. My husband drove us to the hospital and we had the scan. And then I went across to the birth centre that was next door and just had a bit of a breakdown, really, and said, something's wrong and I don't know what it is. And the midwife there said, you need to see your GP because I think you're depressed. You could be depressed.
Right. And, so that was her first.
That was her first.
And
I was thinking, I don't feel, I feel low and I feel dull, but I don't feel like I'm depressed. But to be honest, you don't really know what you're feeling.
Yeah.
So I went to the GP and luckily the GPs in both of my pregnancies have been good. And I didn't have that fight because I know lots and lots and lots of women do.
Yeah.
Went to the GP and she said, okay, I'm going to speak to somebody at the hospital that I know and we're going to see if we can put you on some medication, which they did, and they put me on cyclozine.
Right.
So I was on the cyclozine. However, it just took the edge off, really. It didn't, it made me just about function, but it obviously it doesn't take it away. It's not a magical cure. And I was on cyclozine until 30 weeks.
Right. That's a long time, isn't it?
It is a long time. And I was really worried as well about being on it for that long. And I went home and I did so much Googling. They never sort of said it was what it was. I just Googled and Googled and kind of diagnosed myself in a way.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Were you ever in that first pregnancy, were you ever actually officially diagnosed with having hyperemesis?
No. Gosh. No, I wasn't. And it's so confusing. I mean, as you know, you just think, and all of my friends, well, a lot of my friends were having babies and having these wonderful pregnancies. And I wasn't. And I hated it. And I felt so guilty for hating it. And
but you weren't diagnosed. So if you weren't given any kind of diagnosis at that stage, I can imagine you must have been just feeling like a lot of us do, which is, I'm just really crap at pregnancy and I just need to get over myself.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And you feel like, and you tell people and they just look at you like you're a drama queen or something and just say, oh yeah, you know, have you tried ginger? Which we all know how we feel about that. Or mints or something really, and you just think, are you not listening to what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, yeah. do you think a ginger biscuit or a mint is going to make me want to get out of bed or just breathe normally?
It's so strange, isn't it? Because if there was any other condition, I mean, I can't imagine seeing a friend and her saying to me, oh my God, you won't believe it, I've grown another arm. And me going, oh, have you tried ginger?
Yes.
You just wouldn't do it, would you? You'd be like, wow, that sounds extremely, incredibly serious that that's happening to you and bizarre. How can I support you through that? You wouldn't offer up these simple solutions and expect them to help in any way.
Absolutely. And I think that's part of the problem, because I think that, obviously, women do suffer from morning sickness, which is terrible and horrible. But there is a difference. There is
absolutely
a difference. And so if they think, they just think, oh, well, I had a bit of nausea and I did throw up a few times, so I did this and then I felt better.
Yeah.
I think it's difficult for people to have that understanding.
Yeah.
But I totally agree with you. I would never, ever, ever say to anybody with a migraine, oh, yeah, I had a really bad headache the other day, but I took some paracetamol and was fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's different.
It's completely different. And I wonder, I mean, you have already said already, which is fantastic news. And, you know, whenever I hear a story where someone says my GP was incredible, I'm very thankful for that, because that's one less GP that we know we need to educate. So that was brilliant. And he or she gave you medication to help. But I wonder, what was it like having all of these symptoms, obviously unrelenting nausea and not being sick? Did you ever think to yourself, if I just was a bit more sick, perhaps someone might take me a bit more seriously?
Absolutely. And you also doubt yourself because you just think, oh, I'm just not being strong enough, which actually really, really angers me when I hear people say that. I thought it of myself in the beginning, but the strongest person in the world wouldn't be able to function on HG. They wouldn't be able to get out of bed and go to work and be normal.
Yeah.
So it's not about being weak or just getting on with it and being really strong. There is that to it. And I wish that I had had that foresight, really. But in the beginning, I wasn't being sick, really. I mean, I was more sick in my first pregnancy than in my second. But it's like, if I went to the GP, I think it would have... They always ask, how many times have you been sick?
That's
and
it, yeah.
I hadn't really. Yeah. And I really wanted to say, oh, I've been sick 20 times already.
Mm.
But I hadn't, so no. I couldn't say that.
No.
But I think it is a bit like a magic word, that if you said that, then they would sort of go, oh, okay, right, well, then you must be suffering from hyperemesis or, you know, you might be dehydrated. But as you said, the nausea is absolutely relentless.
Tell me more about that. What it, you know, from my experience, I couldn't really like distinguish between the two, because I was being so sick so much, and I think sometimes I've forgotten what the nausea was like because I've concentrated so much on the sickness. So in your own words, how would you describe unrelenting nausea?
It is every second of every day for 9 months, with every breath in and out. It is there. It is, and it's not just in the background, it is sitting in your throat. The sick is sitting in your throat, but it doesn't come up. I mean, I retched quite a lot, and I brought up blood, and the blood vessels in my face and neck and eyes burst, but I never actually really, you know, not like lots of other women who suffer from HG, you know, they're being sick so many times. It just never came, and it was just sitting there. It's like just holding the sick down in your throat. It's like it's clamped down. It's like your body doesn't actually want to remove it from your body. So it's clamping it down, but it is just there. And, you know, you just don't want to move. You don't want to breathe. You don't want to do anything, because it will just send you into this severe nausea spiral, even worse. It is just... it's just there all the time, and you just think, this is my life now.
And is the association with food still there? So did you feel hungry all the time still, but then it was just the same, like you didn't put food into your body because it would make the nausea worse, like it would make the sickness worse, or what was that like?
Yeah, No, I didn't eat. So I don't really know. I didn't drink. I couldn't. I could drink. The only thing that I could drink with my first pregnancy was Fanta. And literally that was the only thing that I could get in. But that was much further on down the line. In my second pregnancy, I couldn't. I don't actually know. I don't know how I survived, to be honest. A lot of, you know, like other people, because you can't. You just can't. You can't swallow. You can't. And all that saliva that's in your mouth all the time, just there.
So you had a lot of common HG symptoms. So the excess saliva, obviously the nausea.
Yeah.
But it sounds to me, and honestly, when I got your story, you know, I've been at this for 2 years now as a, I suppose, an HG campaigner is what I'm calling myself nowadays, but from doing the sick film and everything. And when I heard your story and I was doing a bit more research and I came across something called vomitless hyperemesis, and I thought, oh my God, I didn't even really know about this. And, you know, every other symptom is still there. And like you said, the sickness is still there. It's in the back of your throat. You're just simply not almost finishing that process off. And that's the only difference.
Yes.
And I just thought to myself, God, and you wrote to me and it was a really lovely passage that, well, it wasn't lovely, but the way you wrote it was a very eloquent way of saying that you felt like if you could say that you've been sick 100 times, it was like a special key that would unlock this medication cupboard of wonder, where you go, ah, there's all the help. Okay, I just had to say I was sick.
Yes, absolutely. And I actually... I felt embarrassed that I could only say that I had been sick a few times, because then you feel like a bit of a fraud, and you're a bit like, oh no, really, you are just having morning sickness, and just go home and get on with it. But actually, you know, don't. If you're feeling like you've got severe nausea, then you need to tell somebody, because it is unrelenting, and it is, and even though you're not being sick, it's still there, and it's like you're on a roller coaster with the worst hangover of your life, and then someone's spun you around 3 times. You can't function, you can't walk straight, you can't think straight. It is just, it's terrible. In my second pregnancy, when I was visiting the GP, I was holding onto the walls as I was walking down the corridor.
Wow.
Because I just couldn't walk. No. I just couldn't function. And I couldn't... It was like you're in some sort of fun house at a fair. It's like you just couldn't...
And when you know, you mentioned earlier that you were prescribed the Cyclozine and you took that for the 30 weeks. I wonder, you know, what prompted you at that point then to come off of that medication? Was that a decision made for you, or did you just feel like, okay, maybe I don't need this anymore?
Well, it was actually a decision that was I made with my husband and the midwife. So basically the midwife said to me, you need to stop work. I was managing still to work at that point, and she said, you are so weak, you're not going to get through the labour. So you need to stop work now. And so that's what I did. I stopped work and I rested for 10 weeks because I was... obviously terrified of, I mean, anyone's terrified of giving birth anyway.
Yeah.
But then the thought that I wouldn't actually have enough energy to push this baby out just scared me so much. So I decided to come off the Cyclozine, and just, obviously that was scary as well to think, oh God, I mean, I'm coming off of that.
How was that? Because I know, you know, in my experience, I had a very similar experience. I was on Dansetron, and I think I took that till about 32 weeks, and for me it was more of a it become an OCD thing. Like I wasn't addicted to it in that sense, but I was addicted to making sure that I took it at the same time every day, because I was so petrified of being sick again. And I wonder, you know, did you feel like me in that I wanted to come off it because I wanted to see maybe the symptoms have gone and maybe I can, you know, slow down this medication now, not take as much, but I was so scared to do it.
Absolutely. And it is scary. And I think you're right, because you're so out of control when you have hyperemesis that those little things that you can control actually become really big things. And I was really scared. And I just, it was like you needed to take that leap of faith. And even though lots and lots of women have taken cyclozine and their babies are fine, you do still have that fear in the back of your mind that I'm putting something into me, a drug, and I'm growing a baby inside me. And it's very scary. So on the one hand, I didn't want to come off of it for fear of just it, of going back to the really, really dark place. But on the other hand, I wanted to do it because I had to try and move it forward. I had to try and I wanted to put it behind me, even though it didn't leave until I had my baby.
So those 10 weeks and those last 10 weeks, did it come back at all, or it did?
Well, it never left, really. Just took the edge off, but it was less. And also, you know, I just stayed in bed. Which obviously doesn't but it just was easier to manage because there wasn't so much pressure of trying to do other things. And you know, so I just stayed in bed. And
Well, I think it's quite nice as well, from what you've said, is that that was a decision made with your midwife. And I'm sure, I'd hope that if you then came off it and you were like, no, I can't handle this, then that offer would have been there for you to go back on it, do you think?
I do. And I'm really, I am so, so lucky that I've been in situations where the GPs have taken me seriously, although I have to say that there is only to a certain stage, and then they just go, I don't know anymore. You know, they can only, they'll prescribe the medication, but then that's about it. But I know, of course, that, and I, that really helped. And I was so lucky to have the cyclozine in my first pregnancy.
So I was going to say, let's move on to your second pregnancy. Like, that's a really easy thing to do. But obviously your first pregnancy went well. You had a very healthy baby. Was it a boy or a girl?
I had a little girl.
Oh, lovely, lovely. So that's wonderful. Your little girl's here. Yes. How much of a gap was there between your first pregnancy and your second?
So there was over 3 years, and it really took a lot for me and my husband to decide to have another one. That was such a, again, a bit of a leap of faith, really. We both said that we wanted to, and I didn't want it to control my life. I didn't want it to be such a, this major thing that that meant that it changed our lives by not having another one. And I think I just thought, well, what I'll do is I'll just march myself back to the GPs and tell them that I'm going on cyclozine, and that's it. And I'll grit my teeth and I'll just get through it. But that was silly.
but that's the problem, isn't it? You know, when you're trying to make that decision with your partner, you think, yes, it's not going to control me. And, you know, the problem is you don't have anything to go on. The only thing you've got to go on is, if it's exactly like it was last time, then I know what to do. But if there's any difference, then you're kind of back to square one again, aren't you? So when you fell pregnant, is that the first thing that you did? You went back to your GP then and said, right.
Yes.
Do this.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And when I found out I was pregnant, myself and my husband, we were obviously so thrilled, but at the same time, both of us were in fear. So I went back to the doctors, and I went back on the cyclozine. But by 5 weeks, again, things were bad. And it was different this time.
How is it different?
It's hard to put into words, actually. So I thought the medication would just get me through, but just one day I started to have tremors, and my whole body was shaking, and my teeth were chattering, and uncontrollably. I could not, as much as I tried, I could not control it. I just knew that this was bad, and there was one day in particular that my parents came round, and they just put me to bed. They just took me upstairs and just put me in bed, and I just laid there and I thought, I'm dying. Oh, I'm actually dying. It was, I had no control of my body, and I was so, I just couldn't even lift up my head. That I just laid there and I just thought you're dying here.
That's it. Yeah.
And then from week six, I started to have seizures.
God, from week six.
Yeah, from week six to week nine, I had seizures, and they started off small at first, and then it got worse and longer, and until in the end, I had one so badly, I just gave in and phoned my husband and phoned my parents and said, "I'm taking myself to A&E."
Yeah,
this is. I think I just thought, I can do this. I can get through it. It doesn't matter. Whatever gets thrown at me, I'm just gonna keep going. I've got the cyclozine. I'm just gonna keep going. Mm. I was so determined to make it work.
But the difference here again is that this time you had a little girl to look after.
Yes. Yeah, I did. And I think actually that was that the guilt. Yeah. Of not being able to play and not being able to do the things that I would normally do with her was horrendous.
Yeah.
And having the seizures, so, you know, I could feel them coming, and if I could, I would lay down on the floor so I didn't fall.
Right, yeah.
And so for my three-year-old, it became normal for her to see mummy shaking on the floor. And when I look back on it, I just think that it's so sad.
Yeah.
That it's so sad that my three-year-old just thought that was normal.
Yeah.
And I could hear, actually, like, it was, like, locked in. I couldn't control what was going on, but I could hear what was going on. And so I could hear my daughter saying, "Daddy, is mummy okay?" I could hear my mum saying, "Breathe, Jo, just breathe, breathe." Mm. I could hear my boss and my colleague saying, "Oh, she's told me that they last for 10 minutes. Let's just keep an eye on her. What should we do?" It's so scary.
Yeah. So you were at work then. So this was happening. This could happen at any time.
This could happen at any time. And the last one, the really bad one, happened at work. I went to work stupidly and my boss just looked at me and was like, "Hi, Jo." Oh. And I just thought, oh my God, I must look so horrendous.
Right.
And I had actually phoned the doctor and said, This is bad. I keep phoning you. I was going to the doctors. They were doing urine tests. They were testing me. But they were just saying, "This is part of HG. Go home."
But that's so funny. I'm not a doctor. I'm not an HG expert, you know, but that I've not heard of seizures being part of HG. And maybe they meant as in like, but even if they meant, you know, your body's breaking down, that's why you're having a seizure, then why were they sending you away?
That's what I don't understand. And the doctor was saying to me 10 minutes before I had that big seizure, "You're not drinking enough water." Like, it's a really easy thing to do when you have hyperemesis. Yeah. And I knew that I wasn't, but I couldn't. I literally, even if someone said, "I'll give you £1 million to drink that glass of water," I couldn't do it.
No, no.
So, you know, I knew that was the case. Mm. But so, you know, I took myself off to A&E and the doctor said my heart rate and my temperature was at a ridiculous level,
right.
And it's an infection. But the nurses were quietly saying to me, "It's the cyclozine. You need to come off the cyclozine."
Okay.
Whereas I think, actually, I was just so severely dehydrated, my body just couldn't cope.
Well, I know from, because I took many a medication in my pregnancy, and there are side effects of this medication, but, you know, cyclozine, kind of dry mouth, constipation, you can feel dizzy and headaches. It's the same with ondansetron. But I personally haven't heard of seizures, and, you know, it could have been. But then the alternative would have been, well, if you take me off that, what else can you give me? Because these seizures sound terrible, Jo, but equally the nausea and, you know, the excessive saliva and everything else that goes with it, you know, it's just as bad. So I think you're right. I think your body was just saying to you, "We're not happy.
You're in trouble.
You're in trouble.
Yeah. And that, what do you choose? I mean, what sort of decision is it? I did come off the cyclozine, and they tried to put me on two further medications, but neither of them worked. And so I just rode it out. And I don't really know how.
So you didn't have any other medication after that then?
I tried, I didn't actually. They prescribed one thing that they said would make the baby drowsy, so I didn't take it.
Oh, wow, okay.
And then they prescribed something else and it didn't make any difference to my HG symptoms. It just added to all of the other symptoms.
Wow. Right, okay.
So I come off of that, and I just rode it out, and I don't know how. I wish I had the answer for that. Yeah. I just don't know.
I don't know how you did. That's incredible.
I think just laying still.
Yeah. But that's, and if you don't mind, and you know, I hope this doesn't upset you, but you know, a lot of women, just like you said, you know, I'm not going to let HG control me. I'm going to have another child. And you know, there's a lot of planning goes into it, which I would definitely recommend anyone do. You know, if you're going to make that decision, plan, speak to your GP ahead of time, et cetera, et cetera. But then I think there's the actual reality of having a second child when you already have a child. And I wonder if you can, if it doesn't upset you too much, you've already mentioned about guilt and things like that. But, you know, what is it really like to ride this out, as you said, and have a three-year-old daughter watching you go through it?
Horrendous.
Yeah.
Absolutely the worst thing ever. It is obviously, I will never be having any more children. And it would be irresponsible of me, I feel, to put anyone through this. Myself, my children, my husband, my parents, because, you know, my mum and dad and my husband have sat down and said, Jo, you cannot have any more children.
Yeah.
I think you'll die the next time. So I just, it would be completely irresponsible of me to do that. And I would never want, I felt like I missed out so much. Being with Cora in that time when I was pregnant, and you feel guilt all over the place. You feel guilt about that. You feel guilt that you can't just get on and that you should just pull yourself together, but even though you know you can't. And it's just a very dark tunnel. It's a very, very dark tunnel and a dark time.
But does Cora remember any of that time? Does she talk about it now or?
No, thank God. No. I asked her, I said, do you remember when Mummy used to lay on the floor? And she was like, no. So I'm so pleased about that.
Yeah.
Even though it is something that I think about every day.
Yeah. I can just imagine you being in bed and just hearing her playing downstairs with Daddy and all of those things. And it must have been so difficult to hear all that, and then obviously the guilt comes up, and I would love someone at that time to have come down, an angel or a fairy, and gone, don't worry, she's not going to remember anything. And then you could just go, okay, are you sure? Like, yes, she won't remember anything. And then it would have helped, but you don't, your brain doesn't know that. And we are so good at making ourselves feel bad as women anyway.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, it must have been so tough, and you're a very strong woman for getting through that, and I'm so pleased that she doesn't remember anything.
So am I, and she was amazing, absolutely so patient and so good, and so, like, I would have a seizure and I wouldn't be able to talk, and she would just know, and she would go and get my husband, and he would obviously then help me and move me, and she, you know, she would bring her favourite stuffed toy and her favorite book and come and read to me in bed and stroke my hair, which is so lovely. But you know, when you feel sick, you just don't want anyone touching you.
Yeah, and I think there's a special kind of, I don't know, maybe there's a reserved strength somewhere right down the bottom that if you don't have children already, like, you use that straight away. But if you do, you're kind of saving it there for that moment where you think, I've got to maybe just do one book at some point this week, and you know, you get through it. But I wonder if, was there anything during that time that would have helped you that you didn't have at your disposal that you think now, if I just maybe had that, like, I don't know what that might be. Maybe you've got an answer, but I just think, was there anything that anybody could have done to make that time better?
No, in all honesty. My family were absolutely amazing and so supportive, but even they say they can understand to a point, but they aren't going through it, so they can't understand. And to be honest, I don't think anybody can.
No.
Unless you're going through it.
Yeah.
You can explain away, but unless you've that there is nothing, I thank God I've never experienced anything like HG, where it's so dark.
Yeah.
It is so, I just felt like this is my life now. I'm never getting out of this. I'm never going to feel better. It was hard for me to remember a time when I felt normal. Mm. And it is just so depressing. And you do just think, I just want to die.
And that's the isolation talking, isn't it? And the loneliness. And there, even though, you know, you did have another child in the second pregnancy, but you're still so very, very isolated, and no one can understand what you're going through. Tell me a bit more about that isolation. Was it what you just said, that you just really felt like, I don't want to be here anymore? What's the point?
Yeah, it's so, I mean, obviously you do, because you're a mum and you want to be there for your child. But at the same time, you just think, I can't be a mum anyway. I'm just... Yeah. And you are already a mum to the child that's inside you, but it's like all your willpower, all your energy, you just don't have it.
No.
It is just gone, and it's just so, so lonely. I can't describe. It is just, you're in that room, not moving.
Yeah.
It is just like a never ending tunnel. Mm. The only thing that really I took solace in was when I could sit up in bed and look at a screen, was to read other people's stories.
Good. Well, I was going to, that was going to be my next question, actually. Were you able to get some kind of support online from other women?
Yes. And good. Aren't women amazing?
Yeah.
Because they do really want to support each other. Yeah. And that so helped me so much. Mm. Just to know I wasn't the only person in the world, even though that's what you feel like, going through it, just to read other people's stories. And I'm so sorry that they were going through it. But at the same time, you take that as, you just need it so much. Mm. I just think it's really important for your mental health. And luckily, this wasn't the case for me, but I can totally see how women find it hard to bond with their babies and have postnatal depression, because you're just... It is so desperate. The desperation, I can't... It's just horrendous. It's like the worst thing.
You're right. Yeah. It's very common for women to feel that afterwards. And I know from my experience, I didn't really... People deal with things differently, but in my experience, I almost completely separated the baby from the pregnancy.
Me too.
So yeah. I think that's how I managed to get through it. And no one told me to do that. It was just something I did. And we've all got different personalities, haven't we? So we deal with things differently. And there's no right or wrong way. But for me, it was very much, that's my baby. And I'm not even thinking about it at the moment. I'm thinking about the pregnancy, which is separate. And I've got to get through the pregnancy. And the baby has nothing to do with that.
Yes, absolutely. And it was exactly the same. And it would really annoy me when people would say, oh, that naughty baby making you sick. And you know, when you just think, really?
That's not helpful.
Really? That is not helpful. And also, like, it's the baby's fault.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I think people don't know what to say. And I think the best thing is, don't say anything.
Well, I was going to ask you, actually, did you have any other unhelpful comments at that time, especially with your second pregnancy?
Absolutely. There were two things that stick out, and I don't think I'll ever forget them. I was explaining to somebody that, you know, I was in bed, I couldn't move, because if you, just the slightest movement would send you into that new spiral of nausea. And you know, all you can do is lay still with your eyes shut, and you can't even think, because you can't think straight, can you? It's just you can't even think. So you just lay there and that's it. And they said to me, make the most of not looking after your daughter and just stick a film on.
Wow.
I mean, what that's a low point, isn't it? What can you say to that?
Yeah.
I just realised in that moment that there was no point explaining it to this person. They hadn't listened, even though I just explained it to them. You know, all you can do is close your eyes and lay still.
And that's part of the problem, isn't it? Is that the time you spent to explain it to that person would have taken a lot of energy from you, and energy is very precious to you at that time. So How many times do you explain it to people and get those kind of responses? It's not many, is it? Because you just give up.
Yeah, absolutely. And So about a month before I gave birth, I had another one who someone said, I was sort of explaining, you know, the nausea, really bad, really bad. And she just went, yeah, I had nausea as well. Did you try mints?
Yeah.
And you know when you're just like, I need to walk away from you because I feel so angry that you think that this would just take it away. Okay. And, you know, other people that have said, oh, yeah, I think I had a touch of that. I think I had a bit of HG. And you're like, no, you don't have a little bit. You don't have a touch of it. It consumes you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think going back to what we said earlier, you know, people come from a place of love the majority of the time. But sometimes they really are, you know, going down the wrong track. And, you know, when people give any kind of advice or opinion, exactly like you said, if you've not experienced something, if you haven't walked a mile in someone's shoes, don't offer advice, offer support. And, you know, if anyone's listening to this now and perhaps they've got a friend who's got hyperemesis or it's all very new to them and they're wanting to know more, the one bit of advice which I think people will gather from what you've just said, Jo, is that if you don't have anything to offer that is proper, solid medical advice or you haven't been through it, you can still be helpful, but you've just got to say, what can I do?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to tell you to go and try some Chinese herb or jump up and down 25 times because that helped my mother in, you know, in the 50s. Or I'm just going to say, what can I do to help you? And I'm so sorry. And that would go such a long way, wouldn't it?
Oh, it really would. Just if someone said, just some understanding, just to say, do you know what? You're having a really rough time and I really feel for you.
Yeah.
That would be so nice to hear because you're just, I think sometimes people think that they've had it and that they got through it and they're really strong and it's just a completely different thing. And really all that there needs to be is a bit of acknowledgement.
Absolutely.
And an understanding.
Yeah.
And that goes a million miles, really.
Yeah. What I wanted to ask you actually, just out of interest, and it would be good to have your opinion on, is that, you know, there's lots of campaigns going on, especially in the HG community, to move the media and the world away from the term morning sickness. And that's something that I'm definitely part of. But, you know, a lot of the time we then jump, let's say, to pregnancy sickness. But I really do think the more I listen to your story, Jo, is that actually what we need to go to straight away, if we can, is nausea and vomiting in pregnancy. And I think that really is the end goal, isn't it? Because it's not just sickness. And if we move from morning sickness to another type of word that describes sickness, we could be alienating people that suffer severely from nausea.
I completely agree, and I think it's so dangerous for any of that kind of label to be put on it, as in like morning sickness, because then people aren't going to their GP and saying, actually, I really need help.
Yeah.
And that's really a strong, brave thing to do, actually, sort of saying, I need help here. But personally, I think it should be called HG.
Yeah.
It should just be given its medical name. It's a condition and it has many symptoms, although obviously nausea and vomiting are the headliners. I think we need to get away from sickness and nausea in pregnancies. It will just continue to be linked with morning sickness.
Yeah.
HG, I think in my opinion, should be described as a condition where pregnant women suffer from many symptoms. And in my case, it was seizures, tremors, nausea. And I'm sure there's lots of people that could add to this list besides nausea and vomiting. I think the problem with sickness and nausea is that medical professionals in the public just won't see it as any different to what the majority of pregnant women suffer from. HG is real and it's a medical condition and it should be treated as such.
Yeah, all fantastic points, and I totally agree with you. And I think, you know, because morning sickness is still so prevalent and it's used a lot, we still have the time to work out what we're gonna try and move it to. And, you know, perhaps it will be in succession. Maybe it's pregnancy sickness first and then we get to this and then we get to that. But as long as we get away from the words morning sickness. But you're absolutely right.
Definitely.
And I don't know who the person was. I'm sure I could look it up. I haven't done it yet. I'll put that on my to-do list, who came up with the name Hyperemesis Gravidarum. But they really gave us a really long name that's difficult to say.
I know, it is really hard.
It's just like, you know, even I'm trying to think of other, like, tuberculosis. That's okay, but it's just one name. And diabetes, they're all very easy to come off the tongue. They're one word. And we got Hyperemesis Gravidarum. But you're right. No, you're right, because HG isn't just about sickness and nausea. It is about many other things, excessive saliva, lots of other things that can happen to you. And I think that's a really good point, Jo, that we need to move towards calling it what it is. You know, I suppose Caitlin Dean from Pregnancy Sickness Support Charity, you know, she always says that you wouldn't say that TB is a really bad cough, you would say it's TB, you know, and I think you're right. It's not really bad morning sickness, really bad pregnancy sickness, or severe this. It's Hyperemesis Gravidarum, and there's a whole host of symptoms that come attached to this condition, and we really need to start talking about all of them.
Yes, I completely agree.
So finally, if you could give any advice to a woman right now who's listening to this, if she's able to, about hyperemesis and how to try and survive, what would you say?
I would say, firstly, you're doing amazing, even though you feel like you're not. And it does feel like a very dark tunnel, but you will get through this, and go and get help. And if you get turned away from your GP, go back. Keep going, keep annoying them, or turn to somebody else. There is medication out there that will help you. It did in my first pregnancy, and you are entitled to it. So keep knocking on that door, and you will get through this, and try and visualize that end goal. Because when I had my second baby, the pure ecstasy of when I'd given birth, I know I'll never feel anything like it again, and I'm okay with that, because it was just, my family was complete and I was still here, and I'd done it, and I was proud of myself, and you should be as well, anybody that gets through this. And it is so hard, but you know, you can do it, you can. It's a very long road,
but you can do it. That's a really nice note to finish on. Jo, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been really nice talking to you. I can't just say this about you, because then you'll listen to another episode and go, hey, what about me? You said that about me. But it's true. I could talk to hyperemesis women for hours. And I think I will say that to every guest, because there is just a bond there, isn't there? There's just an appreciation of each other. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Hyperemesis Files. If you have been affected by anything that has been spoken about in today's podcast, please visit your local hyperemesis charity or speak to a healthcare provider. For more information about the documentary Sick, The Battle Against HG, please visit www.thesickfilm.co.uk.